There are a million ways to make money in the food service industry. You just have to find one. On the Titans of Food Service podcast, I interview real life movers and shakers in the food game who cut through all the noise to get to the top. My name is Nick Portillo, and welcome to the Titans of Food Service podcast. Let's jump right into it. Hello to my fellow food service community from my sunny Orange County, California studio. Nick Portillo here, and this is the Titans of Food Service. Okay, before I go any further, please, if you leave me a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that would be much appreciated. Apple Podcasts on your phone, it's a purple icon. Anytime you get a new iPhone or anytime, all iPhones come with that already downloaded. For those of you using Spotify, you'd have to download it and leave a five-star review. It helps with get the podcast out there, trying to help as many people as possible in the food service industry. So please, your reviews mean a lot to me. Okay, without further ado, today I welcome the Chief Performance Officer of Food Sales East, Eric Martin. We're going to talk about his journey in the food service business, how he got into it. And he's been in the burger business now for over 30 years and talk a little bit about the changes he's seen, especially going back to around 2010 when there was nationalization, a lot of these independent brokers that joined forces to create these large national agencies, talk about his experience through that, and now talk about his current day-to-day and experiences being a member of Sales One, and then also talk about Power BI and the role that it's having on the broker business and in food service in general. So get to talk a little bit about that and how that's pertinent to what he's doing with Food Sales East. So without further ado, let's go ahead and welcome Eric Martin. All right, Eric, here we are. Welcome. Thanks for taking your time to join me here on the podcast.
Absolutely. I'm glad to spend time talking about the industry.
Totally.
Sounds great. Thanks, Nick.
So what I didn't prep you for is I like to start off with what I call the Fiery Five food service questions. So these are kind of easy icebreaker questions. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right. So the first one is, if you could have dinner with any one person, either historical or alive, who would it be and why?
Wow. That is a great question. You know, there are probably a lot of people, but, you know, somebody that I admire and have studied, John Maxwell, is a leadership coach. He's written, early in my career, I probably read, you know, five to seven books that he had written. And I heard him speak within the past year. He's written 90 books today.
That's crazy.
His habits around leadership are phenomenal. I think organizations rise and fall on leadership. Love to have dinner with John Maxwell. So.
I think it's either him or Malcolm Gladwell, one of the two, that they write one page a day and like they just pump out so many books. I don't know if that's John Maxwell or Malcolm Gladwell, but
I think that's part of his habit. It seems like he's talked about that. Yeah,
totally. Which is a great way to go about it. You know, you write your page and then the rest of the day you go down to the beach or something or just relax.
Exactly.
My next question is, if someone had one night in Nashville where you live, where must they eat?
Where must they eat? You know, I would say Bourbon Steakhouse. It is a steakhouse at the top of the JW Marriott. Okay. It is a phenomenal view. The food is fantastic. You know, you can have phenomenal steaks. They have got some great appetizers. There is a campfire s'more dessert that has actual smoke and fire when they open it up and you smell the campfire sitting and there's a bar that goes out over the edge. And so there's kind of a ledge and you look out and see the city. So I would say Bourbon Steakhouse is a must when you come to Nashville.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. My next one is, what is your overall favorite cuisine? If you could only have this one cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Wow. That is, man, it does it not have calories and it doesn't turn to sugar and things like that? You know, I don't eat a tremendous amount of pasta, but I love pasta. You know, I mean, whether it's Alfredo sauce or, you know, angel hair pasta, Amerigo's is one of my favorite restaurants here in Nashville, too. Chef Paul Schrapkowski is a phenomenal chef in Nashville, great restaurateur, but they've got some favorite items. Chicken Tuscany is a great item on their menu. So once a year I go and get that, but I do love pasta.
All right. So, all right.
Absolutely.
My next question is, do you have a favorite food-related memory from traveling, maybe somewhere abroad or even here domestically?
Wow. You know, we were down in Houston, and this is the first thing that came to mind, so I'm going to say it. And I did not I mean, it's so cool how regional cuisine is, but we did grilled oysters. And so they take oysters and put all kinds of butter on them. If you go from Louisiana to Houston, right in that region right there, their grills are full of butter. There's grease everywhere. But they take these oysters and put butter on them, flip them upside down on the char grill, and grill them. And you know, they'll serve them with some kind of toasted bread or grilled bread. And, man, that is phenomenal. That is something phenomenal to try if you've never tried grilled oysters down in that region of the country.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've never had grilled
many
oysters.
Of them. There have been many, and definitely Chicago is a phenomenal food paradise that we've enjoyed. Many restaurants, many years up in Chicago as well. But, yeah.
And my last question is, this one's a personal question because I think I've told you the last few years I've gone to 3 Ole Miss games. Last year I went to Baton Rouge for an LSU game. Should the University of Tennessee, the Volunteers, be on the top of the list to go to next?
Absolutely. It is a phenomenal Rocky Top experience. Tennessee is so supported, and it looks like they've got a fantastic coach. We went to the Texas A&M Tennessee game, and we didn't even go inside that game. We tailgated. I mean, people paid big bucks for tailgate spots right on the lawn, kind of in the courtyard right outside the stadium. The stadium is rocking. They've got new parts of the stadium, older parts of the stadium, and they don't need to change a thing. All of it adds to the atmosphere of the game. But anybody who has not been to a Tennessee game, you can go to a game in the fall where it's mild, and I remember seeing, you know, Kentucky play Tennessee, one of the most beautiful days of the year, you know, but absolutely, it's something to experience and something to be a part of. So whether your team's there or not, you got to go to the Tennessee Vols game.
Yeah, I'm actually, thanks for humoring me on the Fire 5 food service questions, but I'm actually considering, so my buddies and I that I go with to the to these SEC games, they're like, "What do we want to go next?" And I've been saying, like, I think Tennessee is the next place to go. As you know, I'm also a big Tennessee Titans fan, which I think is a blessing and a curse. Like, I've never been. I've actually driven through Memphis before on my way to Ole Miss, but I've never been to a Tennessee Titans game. I've never been to Nashville. I've never done it before, but I just fell in love with the team through a video game when I was a kid. And man, they're just so average all the time. And I see this year the offense should be better, but the defense has some holes. So we'll see what happens. Right.
We'll see what they do. Have a new coach and new team. So we'll see what happens. But hey, Greg Penn will take care of you over in Knoxville. He will help you guys bump it to the next level, and if you need a place to stay in Nashville and Franklin, let us know.
Okay,
you can come you can come to a Titans game the next day. So,
all right, I love it.
Perfect,
Eric. How did you get into the food service industry?
Hey, that's a great question. I sent 3 resumes out after college, and one was to a cell phone company, one I don't remember where it was, and one was to a food broker. And the food broker called. They were the only one of the 3 that called me. I interviewed, and I got the job. And worked for another company for 6 months. And then the guy that trained me came to the current company that I'm at, Food Sales. And he told the owner at the time, the founder of the company, who we bought the company from, he said, "Hey, you need to hire Eric." And so after 6 months in the food brokerage business, that was 31 years ago, fell in love with the industry and the business, and just have continued to learn and have always wanted to be a student of the business. But that's how I got started in the brokerage business.
And how did you get to Food Sales East?
Okay, as we continue to grow. So it was Food Sales Tennessee.
Yeah.
And expanded, and we were in Nashville only. then expanded into Knoxville. Greg Penn started an office over there, and the founder of our company, Randy Sanders, who we learned a tremendous amount from, partnered with Randy. They built a company from scratch in Knoxville, Steel Food Sales Tennessee. We bought a company in Kentucky. We're like, okay, Tennessee doesn't work anymore. We're now in Kentucky, became Food Sales Incorporated, and then started to expand back around 2009 into the southeastern part of the country. Mm-hmm. And so we changed the logo and the name of the company to Food Sales East, partnering with other like-minded brokers. And then we ended up rolling all those companies together to, you know, be what Food Sales East is today.
Yeah. Wow, that's impressive. And it's what, 8 states?
9 states.
Nine states.
So we cover the 9 states in the Southeast. We built our company in the Mid-South. We raised our families. We put our, you know, raised our families, put clothes on them, you know, in building the company in the Mid-South. And then we started to realize that there was tremendous volume in Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas. Mm-hmm. We were fortunate to partner with Candy Price. She had built a company from scratch. And then we bought some companies in Georgia and the Carolinas and started to expand from there. Some very small companies and expanded from there. But Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas are definitely where the biggest part of the volume is percentage-wise in the Southeast.
I've always wondered that because, you know, here, you know, I'm in California, Nevada, Hawaii. Obviously, California is much bigger than Nevada and Hawaii, but I've always been curious for your footprint. So it's Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas is the biggest markets within your territory?
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, it's for a fully developed manufacturer across the Southeast, you're probably looking at 75 to 80% of their volume a lot of times would be done in Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas. And we were kind of young. I was 36 when we bought the first company, and Greg and I bought that together with a couple other partners. And then we started to see all of our competitors. They were big brokers out of Florida coming in and buying our competitors in the Nashville market. And we finally said, hey, if they can come in here and poach and take out our competitors, we're going to go into Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas. So we're really the only broker from the Mid-South that said, you know, we're the small markets going into the big markets, and we're very, very proud of that. I think it's served us well, and it was the right decision at the time that we did that, and it's still the right decision today.
Yeah, you don't see that too often where you see the small markets going into the bigger or taking over the bigger ones. But I guess, right. You know, you probably have the right message and the right financing and whatnot to make that happen. So it all makes sense. How did Chris Craddock and you join? How did he get into the business?
So Chris was, you know, he's a phenomenal leader. He worked with Nestle. So he started on the street selling Nestle Dry down in Mississippi. And over a 15-year career, he continued to advance, moved to multiple cities, had 3 children in 3 different cities. He's got 2 phenomenal daughters and a phenomenal son. One's finishing up at Auburn. The other one's going to go to Auburn, and one graduated from Auburn, got his CPA. So, but he had them in 3 different cities. He was in Dallas at one point, Florida at one point, and in California. He was in the corporate office with Nestle. And so he was an entrepreneur playing a corporate game or, you know, pursuing his career in corporate America. And the things that he learned at Nestle have served him well in the brokerage business. But he and his wife were both from Mississippi, and they said, you know what, we're ready to go home. You know, they were at that point in their life, be around their parents. And so they bought the Nestle broker in Alabama, and Chris has done a phenomenal job running that company. He's a co-CEO of Food Sales East today, very proud of what he's done. But we merged our companies together, and we all dated for a few years to make sure that we had the same vision, the same core values, the same principles, and that we were prepared to merge our companies together. And when we did that, we became even stronger, you know. And that was kind of a process and story in and of itself. But, so that's how he got in the brokerage business. His wife said, I'm going back to Mississippi. What are you going to do? And so he said, I'm going to buy the Nestle broker there. We're going together. So anyway. That may be a little tongue-in-cheek, but that's the basis of the story.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. For us, you know, we started back in 2015, and all of the lines that we had really that year, we started like in June 2015. We're doing a lot of pro bono work, just trying to get our name out there, you know, working for free. But then we started picking up some brands that were paying brands in the following year in 2016. And there's still, I can think off the top of my head, four brands that we have that came from that time. Are there any brands that you have that you started with when you got in the business over 30 years ago?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So I would say the most sacred thing to me in all the interviews that I've been in to say, hey, we want to be your broker. We want to be your sales agency that you go to battle with in the market. The most sacred thing to me is when a manufacturer reaches across the table and says, hey, Nick, we want to hire you in the California market, or hey, Eric, we want to hire you in Tennessee or in the Southeast. So we take that very serious when they do that, and we want to meet and exceed their expectations 100% of the time. Nouse Foods is the longest standing manufacturer with us in Nashville. So 1983, they put Randy in business. The unpeeled sliced apple for Cracker Barrel. They did not do that product at the time. Randy worked with Nouse, and they, from what I understand, they drew it out on a napkin, talking to Cracker Barrel and saying, hey, this is what we think we could do for you. And they said, hey, let's test that. And I've been to Nouse. I've been to their plants. Today, it went from, that was not even a product for them. Today, there's an entire plant that runs full time and produces nothing but an unpeeled sliced apple. And it's primarily due to the volume from Cracker Barrel. So it's pretty phenomenal, pretty phenomenal story to look around and walk through that plant. And it's pretty cool that, you know, was from a success story or a sale made in Nashville years and years ago.
Amazing. Yeah. It's funny, one of the four brands I was thinking of that I started with in 2016 is Nouse.
It is. Okay.
And they've been with us now, you know, 2016 is 2024, 8 years. And just great people, great products, and have been a phenomenal partner. And yeah, I always like to say, just I'm sure you do too, like in interviews for new brands, we're looking for long-term partners, not looking for someone here today, gone tomorrow. You know, want to grow with them. And I think sometimes you can get that feeling too within a conversation with somebody, if they're going to be here, you know, for 6-12 months, and then that's it, they're going to, you know, they change around quite a bit. And sometimes you just have to either know that going in, or pre-vet those, you know, those types of brands that aren't looking necessarily for that. And that's fine. You know, everybody's looking for something different. But I definitely like the ones that we can grow with, because as brokers, we put a lot of time and effort, as do the manufacturers, into what we do. And it's, you know, we're here to grow new sales.
That's right. And another manufacturer I have to mention too is we represented them in part of our footprint. And, you know, the industry nationalized, and so there were some changes, but we have recently reconnected with Smucker's Marlon Wendland. He is a phenomenal sales leader. You know, we just value that partnership. We value his friendship, and we value his leadership. You know, the things that we've learned from him. So working with manufacturers that make you better, even like Rich's and Smithfield and companies like that, you know, those are very valuable brands and have made us all better as a company.
You mentioned some large brands. You know, in your portfolio, you have big brands like some of the ones you just mentioned. And then you have other brands on the other side that maybe have been around for a few years, right? Maybe they're just a little bit smaller. When it comes to expectations between the big, really established brands versus maybe the more scrappy startup, are the expectations similar? Are they more? Are they less for the smaller versus the bigger in your experience?
Yeah. So, hey, when a manufacturer is big and they do a lot of business, you have to dedicate a lot of resources to make sure you continue to grow their business. And if you've got somebody that is more of a startup, I think it's important that we look at, hey, where can we get the wins? You know, and sometimes when you're a startup, you're trying to establish a base of business, or maybe there's a base of business and you want to take it to the next level. I mean, I think we've got to be a little more strategic. And I think one thing we learned during COVID is, hey, you've got to have more communication is better than less communication. Nobody knew what was going on. That's something Chris and Greg did a phenomenal job of with our team. And we got on Zoom calls on a regular basis. And, kept people up to date on what was going on and what we were learning and what our strategy was. So more communication is better than less communication. So a smaller manufacturer that's trying to establish a business, we have to ask questions like, okay, what distributor do you want to get in? And hey, are you willing to invest aggressively with the first operators so that we can get a truck coming in and then we can build more profitable business around it? I mean, there's so many demands in the business. It takes a lot of resources, and your margins on the first fruits or the first business that you get in a market, you can't expect to make the highest margin. So we have those conversations. In the manufacturers that really buy into that strategy, one, it puts wind in the sails of our team. It puts wind in their sails, and then you can build more profitable business around that. So I think the strategy is different, you know, when you're looking at a big brand and somebody that's kind of getting started.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, yeah, I get that. That makes sense. Going back to Food Sales East, and what was it like back in, was it maybe 2010, somewhere around there, when the consolidation was happening in the industry? We had a lot of these independently owned brokers rolling up into the national model. You know, my dad was part of that with Food Sales West becoming Advantage Waypoint and seeing the differences in that. But how did you navigate those times? Because I'm sure there was a lot of threats and opportunities to your business at that time.
No doubt about it. Yeah, it was a unique time. The retail brokerage industry went through it 10 years before we did. Actually, two blocks over from me is one of the largest independent retail brokers. And when I saw what was happening, I went and knocked on his door. I didn't know him. And I knocked on his door. They went and got him, the owner of the company, brought him out, introduced him to me. And I said, hey, I wanted to see if I could buy your lunch because I know you've navigated nationalization. And it was before what's going on in the food service industry. I said, we're a food service broker two blocks over. You don't know who we are, but I'd like to buy your lunch and pick your brain. And he said, oh, no, I'm buying your lunch. You're getting ready to go through some challenges. And so that was a good friendship. And just hearing his story, and we would connect through all that. But yeah, I knew your dad when we represented one of the largest lines in the industry. He actually came to our office during that time. He's very, very highly respected. You know, Gary North, you know, always spoke highly of your dad before I met him for the first time. But we had some meetings here in our Nashville office talking about that. But yeah, so looking at, you know, we had one manufacturer tell us, hey, here's what we want you to do with your company. And we chose not to do that. I mean, we could have chosen to take that direction, but we had to make a decision. Do we hide behind the zeros of the big manufacturer telling us what to do with our company? Or do we want to prove that we could deliver results for any manufacturer, regardless of their brand, and that what we have to offer is our ability to produce volume for anybody? And so we chose that route. And for the first few years, we didn't know if it was the right decision. But looking back on it, there's so many people that took the other route that are saying, hey, I'm so proud of you guys and what you did. We didn't think that route for us would be the right model for every manufacturer in the industry long term. And and it turned out that way. It was a challenging. Yeah, there was, hey man, the stress during that time. We bought a company a few years before, and you lose that kind of revenue. I remember going home, I would order a Papa John's pizza every night because that was about the only, it was high calorie, and I needed high calorie because I wasn't eating a lot during that period of time. And my boys are like, yeah, that was the Papa John's period of dad in the food business. So, but yeah, it was, we're all stronger and better for it. Yeah. And it was definitely a unique, interesting time. So.
Yeah, I remember that time my dad, he was flying. He was always gone for like a 2-year period, putting all of that together. And, you know, looking back, I know it was really tough on his health and whatnot. And then I remember I was living in Florence, Italy, because I was doing study abroad. And he called me and said, you know, the show's over. Like, I've been let go. My 2-year contract is up, and that's it. And for like, he went and worked for a customer of his after that, R.W. Zand. But before that, he just took time off for like 6 weeks. And I think he grew a little bit of a beard. And he's like, man, this is the best I've ever felt like, to just like unwind from all of that. It was a lot of pressure and expectations. Right. And And it makes sense why the guy that was two blocks down from you bought you lunch, because right. I could see it as someone's son going through it, that it was really a lot and more than probably one person or should go through for sure.
That's right. Hey, I heard Portillo Sales and Marketing. I'm like, John Portillo has started a new company.
He yep.
stepped away, started a new independent company, and hearing your story, you graduate from college and go to work for him. We are very yep. proud of what you guys have done and the value you're adding
Thank you.
To the industry. And definitely proud to be partnered with you guys in Sales One.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well.
Tell me, Sales One. So I know you were at the forefront of starting Sales One. And for those that don't know, Sales One is a nationwide broker organization that has nine of the best independently owned food service brokers. We're regional, right? So we cover multiple markets or multiple states. How did that idea come to be?
Yes. So I know that Bobby, Chris, and Howard were the founding members of Sales One. But yeah, as we met Bobby and he's on fire out of Dallas, Texas, he was determined to put together a national model. You know, we, in order for us to be relevant for our food service partners, manufacturers, distributors, everybody, we realized that, you know what, we need a national footprint. And we had seen other people do it, and we wanted to do it as well or better than anybody in the industry. And so there were times that we had manufacturers say, man, we like the way you guys execute. We like your culture. Who do you know out west? You know, and so that's where the vetting process started of saying, hey, who are some other large regional brokers that have efficient systems, processes, and just really the gut instincts and the desire to get stuff done. You know, GSD, you know, that's what we learned from Marlon Wendland, GSD, yeah. get stuff done. And that is a thread that runs through the entire Sales One organization. So you guys, Portillo Sales and Lakeland and American Patriot kind of locked arms and said, hey, we're going to put this together nationally to have locally owned sales agency with national reach. And it's been a phenomenal 7-year journey. Yeah. And we all continue to get better every single year and then filled in the rest of the map with the other large brokers that are part of Sales One.
Totally, totally. What about for the future of the food service broker world? Where do you see something like Power BI? I know we that's already in play now. Where do you see that evolving? And for those who don't know, maybe a little background as to what it is.
Yeah, so Power BI is a data visualization tool. You've got two primary data visualization tools, at least that I'm aware of. You've got Tableau, owned by Salesforce. Mm-hmm. You've got Power BI, which is owned by Microsoft. And both of them take data and instead of running separate reports, you can create series of filters and icons and graphs to be able to visualize the data from your business to create actionable insights to coach your team. And I know over the years, looking back before Power BI, it would take a lot of time. And hey, everybody started doing more with less, you know? I mean, everybody's cutting margins and tightening up and, you know, you still have to produce results and find ways to produce results. So we have used Power BI as a tool to feed a lot of our CRM data, feed our sales data, into so that we can use it to create actionable insights. So if we look at the time a division leader would spend or invest into putting data together to coach their team, one, it would take hours, and two, it wouldn't happen every week. Mm-hmm. But with Power BI, being able to feed data in and get actionable insights, we can coach our team and give an executive summary every Monday. And we didn't have to spend 4 or 5 hours on Sunday putting that together. So it's an extremely powerful tool that when it's set up right to give you the right data. And when you're looking at executing for multiple manufacturers, you've got to be able to communicate that in a digestible format. Plus, it helps you stay connected with your manufacturer partners where you can review some of the important data to their business, to your business, so that you stay in sync and continue to grow together.
Yeah. So the data you use is based on the call data that your team members or your reps put into the system. Is that correct?
That's right. So that's part of the data, the call data. So, you know, we'll create opportunities. Some manufacturers, we need to manage and maintain a pipeline of opportunities, pre-planned mm-hmm. pipeline opportunities. So we keep an eye on that and monitor that. And then we go execute those opportunities and make sales calls at the operator level. Hey, there's still a lot of product that is sold in our business by saying, hey, I'm going to throw Hanes Celestial in my bag. I'm going to throw Garden of Eatin', you know, tortilla chips in my bag. I'm going to throw Terra chips in my bag. I'm going to, you know, throw Smucker's PCs in my bag. And so you're going out and seeing operators and giving them concepts and ideas on how to put profitable items on their menu. And you say, hey, I've got a few other items that I thought might work for you. And you sample those items. So we do have to roll all that data up. I mean, we are the commercial for product. So it's important that our team has great account relationships, has great product knowledge, and we are the commercial. So we need to be able to tell the story of the manufacturer, communicate the features and benefits of the product, and be able to effectively get it on a food service operator's menu so that you create long-term sustainable business. Absolutely.
I love it. You know, I love the data and sophistication of data. And I would imagine, would you say that there's more manufacturers that are now moving towards wanting that from their broker partners?
I would say yes. I mean, we've always done reporting, but I think any manufacturer partner appreciates, you know, being organized, being able to communicate and share that data, just seeing, hey, do you have the right habits? I mean, really, it goes back to habits. Can we drive good habits with our sales team? You know, so they're taking the right products out to the right accounts and we can monitor it. You know, I think data used correctly inspires our team to sell more. And that's how we want to see our sales leaders using the data. It's not something to beat people over the stick. It's still a people business. It's still, hey, let's put product in a bag and cook it off and put it in the operator's mouth, because it's the hospitality business. We have to find things that they're going to be excited to put on their menu.
Sure. So, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, Eric, I want to say thank you so much for joining me here. I got a question. One last question though. I know you have some kids. Would you ever want them to be in the food business?
I'd love for them to be in the food business. It has been a great industry. You've got to work hard to learn whatever you do. I've got one brother that is a oral surgeon, you know, Mayo Clinic trained oral surgeon. He's a dentist, a doctor, and an oral surgeon. He worked very hard to get good at that. I mean, he was working 100 hours a week in medical school. I've got another brother that's an attorney, CPA. He's worked very hard in that industry. But I think somebody who's willing to come into the food industry, and I said, hey, if my brothers are willing to become experts at what they do in their field, I want to be every bit as much of an expert in my field. And so that drove me, and it still drives me to continue to learn the business, stay on the cutting edge, deliver industry-leading results. I've got three boys. They've all got different backgrounds, and I would love to see any of them in the food business if that's what they choose to do. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Eric, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be chatting soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Nick.